guys. I'm Heather, and I'm the oldest. She's the emotional one.
Is it Bruce Dickinson?
Man, why? I mean, like, you haven't even read the list. You're like, Heather.
Hey, guys. I'm Ben. I'm the middle child.
And he's the practical one.
What I need you to understand is that you have lost all credibility when we get to the cutting stage.
Why?
Kenny Chesney was your second pick.
I'm Beth, and I'm the baby.
She's also the swing vote.
My picks are great. And if you don't believe it, just ask me. I won't argue with you because I'm mature.
Together, we make the Music List Podcast. We want to welcome everyone back to the Music List Podcast. My name's Ben. With me are my sibling sisters. That's redundant and repetitive.
Okay.
Heather and Beth. And we hope everyone's having a happy October. This episode, let me tell you how this episode came about. Before I tell you what it is, there's the backstory. We really like our Halloween episodes, but we wanted to make sure that we were not going to run out of potential Halloween episodes. And so we were thinking about the future, and we thought, well, what could we possibly do that is in the same vein as Halloween, but is not a Halloween? We're like,
yes.
Kiss wears a lot of makeup.
They're Halloween adjacent.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, yeah, they're connected. So this is the best of Kiss, the very best of Kiss. One of the most iconic rock bands of all time. I'll start by asking Heather, because she's seen them, would you say five times live? You've seen them five times live? I've seen them once. Kiss is a band that you really, I think in order to appreciate them, you've got to see the performance. Alice Cooper's kind of the same way, right?
100%. I mean, their music is not really, it doesn't really translate fully until you see the absolute spectacle that is a Kiss show. This speaks to, I guess, how impressive that was. Until I saw Taylor Swift, I'd never seen, like, I would say that Kiss, as far as production value and all the pyro, and that's still the most pyrotechnics I've ever seen in a show, for sure. But so much is wrapped up in the theatrics as well as the music. So, it's an experience.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And when I saw them live, I mean, it was literally hot in the arena because of the amount of fire that they use in
and
their
we
show.
Were
and
at
not
the
to mention the lights.
End. We
you know, they've got those big Kiss lights, the lights in the shape of Kiss.
Yeah.
And those things generate, well, they probably don't now. I bet they use LED these days. But back when we, it was probably Alltel Arena way back then.
It was. And it was like in 99 or something
we didn't know what LED lights were, so it was just heat lamps. Wham! And, I mean, they're freaking huge. And then,
well, they were at one end of the arena, and we were at the opposite.
We were kind of on the side, towards the back.
But toward the back of the arena, and you could feel the heat from those flames that came up. And I cannot imagine being front row. Burn your face off. I don't know how they did that, but...
Yeah, so obviously, in addition to that being good live, they've sold over 100 million albums. That's a lot of albums, many of which they're one of the few bands to have successful multiple live albums, and I think that speaks to what they do. You know, really, I would say when did Alice Cooper start with the theatrics? Probably about
early
the same
70s.
Time. They probably were, you know.
He was before Kiss because they modeled some of their look from Alice Cooper. So he started before they did.
Okay, so.
Kiss's first album was in 74.
74. So they're both of them, I would say, are pioneers of the great theatrics that go
shock
along
rock,
with,
yeah.
with rock and roll. But what I'll say about Kiss, maybe, and I know this is a loaded statement, and you're, everyone's free to disagree, but when it comes to, okay, Kiss and AC/DC to me, when you just think about fun party songs, I don't know that there are other bands that can match what Kiss and AC/DC, their output for just full-blown fun rock and roll. We're going to have a good time rock and roll.
Yeah, they don't get too deep.
No, no. And that's
lyrically.
And that's fine. You know what you do well. You know, in Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, you know, it's called the hedgehog concept. You know, you know what you do well, and you don't venture outside of it. You be the very best at that. And at just being fun, there are not many bands that can say that they meet the fun standard of Kiss, in my opinion. So we're and we all are fans of Kiss. I know that their biggest heyday was probably before I was buying albums, but when I was in college, I got the double platinum album and wore that thing plumb out. Two CDs, my friend. Two CDs. That's why it was double platinum. When do we want to tell the Little Rock story?
I say go ahead and tell it.
Okay, so I say the Little Rock story because we were in Little Rock. It was Skid Row
without Sebastian
Bach, which I argued that they should have changed their name to Skid Mark. Ted Nugent, who understandably is polarizing politically, but the guy can play a guitar. I mean, there's good no, show. You know, and he was shooting flaming arrows into guitars and stuff like that. He was fun to watch. And then we saw Kiss. So I tell you that to say we're in Little Rock. And Paul Stanley, now all these guys are from New York. So they, and Paul Stanley's New York accent is strong. You know, Gene Simmons sounds like he could be from anywhere, really. I mean, his New York accent doesn't seem. Now, part of that may be he may, because I guess he grew up in a Jewish household where they spoke Yiddish. Maybe. I don't know. What did he grow up? His mom did not, I don't think, spoke English when they moved over from. He was born in Israel,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So his mom did not speak any English when they moved over here. So that may have influenced his accent or lack of accent. But so I don't even remember what song it was on, but Paul Stanley, and he's got that high voice, that high pitched voice. And he gets on there and he said, "When we were making the dates for this tour, Little Rock wasn't even on the list." And a boo, boo. But then I said, "How can we not go to a place that has rock in the name?"
And it erupted.
And then everybody erupted. Like, yeah. And I was like, "Oh, did they also go to Plymouth Rock?" I mean, did they go to all the cities that have rock in it? You know,
maybe.
It was cool. And it's just when you talk about stage presence and knowing how to work a crowd. I mean, really, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley are really, really good at it. And they come at it from so different ways.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that makes Kiss so interesting, because they've got two lead singers that are absolutely nothing alike.
Yeah. I had the biggest crush on Paul Stanley. Oh, my gosh. You know what killed it? What? One day I was watching TV and I realized that we had the same haircut, the same bangs. And I was like, okay,
I can't have better hair than you.
I'm over it now.
Do you know why he made his hair the way that it was?
Because of his ear.
Yes.
What's wrong with his ear?
He has a wonky ear.
He was born basically without an ear.
Oh, I did not know this.
Which plays into how his character came about.
Right. And so he can't really hear out of that ear either. It's like not just deformed, like he's got trouble hearing out of that ear. The Kiss documentary was really interesting, actually. But he once he realized that he could grow his hair out long and cover the ear. He said he got really bullied in school. Yeah. Really badly. Really badly. But he always wanted to be a star. He was, you know, that's what, that was the thing. He wanted to be a star. That's where the, that's why he wears the big star on makeup.
Gene Simmons was talking about how all their characters came about. He said, it, you know, it pulls some, every, all of their characters pull out something in them. And he was talking about how Paul Stanley, you know, was the lover and, you know, he wanted, he could be confident and all that stuff. And he's like, and I was the demon. I loved all these horror movies. And Ace, you know, he talked about space all the time and everything. And Peter liked cats.
Oh, so, but it's a fun band, no doubt. So
and the marketing, good Lord.
Oh my gosh. They were selling all kinds of stuff.
I've never
seen now, that was going on. Even when I remember it when I was a kid, because Kiss in the '80s was still massive.
Oh yeah. And the lunch boxes.
And so I remember lunch boxes
figures and
yeah,
Kiss toys. Coffins.
Yeah. Coffins. I think Gene Simmons, his marketing mind,
man.
Because I loved the show Gene Simmons Family Jewels.
That was a great show.
That was out in like the 2000s.
Yeah.
So that's like my biggest exposure to Kiss was through that show, I guess, and him and his family. And dude, that man will put his face on anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's what I've learned from Gene Simmons. If you don't want to get canceled,
don't care.
Just don't care.
Oh, yeah.
Don't apologize.
Yeah.
Just keep saying it over and over again. And people eventually, even though they disagree, will be like, he's not going to stop. We'll go on to somebody else.
Oh, that's just Gene.
Yeah. That's just Gene being Gene.
But like, I remember.
Also, his name's Gene, but he's such a BA. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was
little, we had an Uncle Gene.
We did.
He did not act anything like
Gene. Not at all. Oh, no, man.
A great Uncle Gene. He was a great uncle.
Great in the line of family naming, and also great as a person.
He was
great squared.
Great squared.
I never knew Uncle Gene to be cross. Never.
No, he's not. Very even.
You know, tempered. Just, he kind of had a everybody's home like, who's Uncle Gene?
Now we're going to talk about our family history. But
he had a very Richard Petty kind of
vibe to me. Yeah, and the mustache too.
He had the belt buckle with the scorpion in it. You remember that?
I shelled so many peas over there.
Oh, we probably ought to get back to Kiss. Okay, so if you've not listened to our podcast before, first of all, shame on you. But here's the way this works: is we have three rounds. We're all going to pick, in this case, what we think are the best Kiss songs. Okay, so listen to me out there. The best Kiss songs, not the ones that we think are necessarily the most popular Kiss songs, but the best ones. All right, so keep that in mind. We do snake draft. Beth will draft first, Heather drafts second, I draft third, which means, because it's a snake draft, I will draft first in the second round, then Heather, then Beth will get the first pick in the third round. That'll give us a total of 9 picks. And then we're going to try to whittle that 9 down to 5. That's the 9-5 round. And then we are going to try to rank those remaining 5 songs, 1 through 5. And then we'll have the definitive, very best. And by that, that means that I don't know if you guys know this, but we trump Rolling Stone. Our lists are more definitive than Rolling Stone.
Sometimes.
I feel like our selections are more sensible.
I think Rolling Stones thinks too much.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I think they try to be artsy or something. I don't know. All right, but Beth, you get the first overall pick on the very best, the essential very best of Kiss. Beth, what is, in your opinion, the best Kiss song of all the times?
All the times. Detroit Rock City.
Bye.
So this is one of their most popular songs, even though it didn't chart. It's ranked number 6 on VH1's Top 40 Greatest Metal Songs. Paste ranked at number 3 on the 20 Greatest Kiss Songs, and Louder Sound ranked at number 1 on their list of 40 Greatest Kiss Songs. It's based on an incident that happened in Charlotte, North Carolina. Someone got hit and killed by a car outside of the arena, and it struck Paul Stanley that people can be on their way to do something that's this party and celebration of life and then die on their way to do it or in the process of that. And so it's an interesting duality throughout the song, going back and forth through the crowd, because you like the choruses are all these. It's like changing scenes. It's very cinematic in its in the way that it's written. So going back and forth between the choruses of all these people partying and being out of their seats and having a good time, and this person who's on their way trying to make it to the show, but they die on the way. So for me, it's like the leader of the pack by the Shangri-Las or whatever. Like, you can feel that tension building. You know that through the verses, you're leading up to something bad. And so, and it's got that iconic guitar riff, the R&B inspired bass line, that little through the middle. Like, I love Gene Simmons. He's so maybe he's the person I should start mentioning in every episode. Mm-hmm. To see if he'll respond.
And he very well may if he ever sees it, yeah. Because he does like to respond.
Yeah. I was going to do that with somebody else, but they've had some controversy recently, so maybe that was...
More than Gene over the years?
No, just recently. It's just one thing. It was Dave Grohl. I was going to mention him in everything just to see if he'd respond, but maybe that was divine providence that I didn't do that. Because he's having a rough time right now.
The whole baby out of wedlock thing?
Yeah, which, I mean, I want to say, you know, like that Dave Chappelle, even if he did it, you know?
You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? But I mean, you know, whatever. We don't have to get into that. But anyway.
He got into that.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
So back to the song. The bass line.
That one out.
Anyway, the bass line I really like. We never. You say that, and then it always still ends up in the show. But anyway, the guitar, that intro sets the tone of the song. It's urgent, dynamic. So it's compelling musically and lyrically. I think it's just one of those quintessential Kiss songs. And, you know, how can you not go to a city that has rock in there? How can you not pick a song that changes the way you say a city's name? Because I'll be sitting there like...
Detroit.
Which is not...
Detroit.
Detroit. Yeah. It's French now. No. Detroit. So, yeah. I enjoy it. It's a good song.
Solid choice. Very solid choice. Heather.
All right. My first pick is from 1976 Destroyer album, God of Thunder.
Okay. Some creepy kids.
Oh, like we got one Paul Stanley. That means you keep up one Paul Stanley song and one Gene Simmons song.
I'll keep a tally.
Yeah, I mean that bass line.
Tenacious D.
Yeah. Well, Tenacious D is pretty Kiss. So this was written by Paul Stanley, but he passed those lead vocals over to Gene Simmons, which
good
is
choice.
Very good choice. And
could you imagine? God of Thunder.
Thunder. So on that Kistery documentary, which is clever, Paul Stanley was saying, I may be the voice of Kiss, but Gene Simmons is the face. And so this is Gene Simmons' theme song. This is the part where they have the bass solo and the part of the show where he spits all the blood out and the tongue. And I mean, everything that scares, you know, adults about Kiss, usually at a Kiss show, is taking place in this song. It's that thundering bass line, that really hard riff. It's big and it's scary. And the best way to listen to it, I think, is live. And the next best way to listen to it is listen to the live album versions of it. It's on pretty much every live album that they did. It has everything. It has creepy little kids. It has all these big sound effects. It's supposed to be scary. And it is everything that Gene Simmons wanted his demon character to be. So it's a big part of their image and a big part of their sound. I think it's one of their harder chugging songs and regarded by many Kiss fans as their best song. So,
And so I think this is a good time to ask the question, because we've got Detroit Rock City, mm-hmm. and we've got God of Thunder. And so Kiss is kind of in the middle of, there is a debate about whether Kiss is hard rock or metal. And I feel like God of Thunder definitely skews metal, mm-hmm. but Detroit Rock City definitely skews hard rock. And so, I mean, I would say that they walk that fence line pretty well, and that I think they're solidly in both camps, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think that they're both metal and hard rock. I don't know why people have to say that you got to lump them into one category. I mean, I think that they are sufficiently in both.
I think they, over the years, show that they have a lot of range and adaptability, which will come through mm-hmm. in some of my later picks. Yeah.
So there are some other songs that they.
I think metal fans. I think metal fans like I don't want to throw metal fans under the bus, but I think they like a darkness.
Yeah.
To their music, and
it's like very even theatrical.
Even a lot of the metal songs that Kiss will have, they're not. The content's not dark, you know.
Yeah.
I think that is off putting to some metal fans who like.
Not quite dark enough.
Right. Yeah. And I might be wrong. I would love to hear feedback from, you know, people that like are. That's what they do. They like metal. I would love to hear from like pure metal fans about where they see Kiss in
That's the thing. Is there? I mean, like pure metal, because there are still so many offshoots of.
I don't know,
like subgenres.
Those Norwegians, man.
Yeah. I mean, like I would.
Yeah, it's not that for sure.
Like I would say that like Slayer and Pantera are you know, fully like they don't really
Cannibal
diverge from.
No, not within like their music, but I'm saying if you're making a tree of a genre of rock, and then you go like rock as broad, and then you say metal, but then even from metal, there are so many little trickle downs that you could. And so I would say if you say you're a metal fan, you could still, that could mean so many things to different people.
Yeah.
I don't think Kiss wants to pigeonhole themselves into one thing. No, I think they want to be all things to all people.
Yeah, because they want to sell those albums.
That's more album sales.
Yeah, they want to sell those albums.
But I, you know me and Halloween and... I tend to skew a little dark too sometimes. And I don't know, there's just something just big and kind of scary. And especially when you pair it with the visuals and everything.
Which is so funny coming from Gene Simmons, who... But, you know, we were talking before this of it's so straight laced about, you know, no substance abuse, nothing like that. But then he's like this, this character.
All right.
Yeah.
We ready for me to pick?
Yep. I think so.
This song has maybe my favorite opening line in the history of music.
Oh, I hope it's what I think it is. I have a great story about
Mark
this.
One for Gene. Get ready for this. Get up and get your grandma out of here. Get up while Jim is working hard this year. And be good to the things that serve to do. Be good if you're feeling good. Boom, boom, boom. That's a great opening line, ain't it? Get up and get your grandma out of here. It's not put the women and children to bed, but you better put grandma to bed. You better get grandma out of here.
Can I tell you
here.
A fun fact about the song before you start?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I tried out for majorette in eighth grade, and I made it, by the way, this was my tryout song. I don't know what I was thinking. I was thinking I really like Kiss, but can you imagine going into your eighth grade major at tryout?
Those judges were probably like, what is happening?
So we can settle something. A lot of people want to know, what does it mean? You know, your man is working hard. It's worth a deuce. So some people think that there's a sexual connotation.
With Kiss, no.
What?
Well, I think that's part of the reason people believe that. I kind of thought, you know, the man's coming home from work. Maybe you're just supposed to leave him alone for a while.
2 seconds.
And let him, you know, take care of a bowel movement. Drop a deuce.
Oh, no. I don't.
But nay, that's not what it's about either. Gene Simmons answered this on multiple occasions. It's actually worse. It's misogynistic. What he's saying in the album is that he's comparing men that go to work with homemakers, and it's worth a deuce, meaning that the man is worth two times more than the woman that stays home and doesn't
Gene.
Go to work.
Gene.
Did I ruin it for you?
I love Gene Simmons. Don't be saying that kind of stuff.
I didn't say it.
He did. Yeah, he I know.
And he's actually gone on record a couple of times to say that the song is basically about traditional gender roles, and that the man that goes out to make a living is worth twice as much as the homemaker. That aside, this song is on 21 different Kiss albums. Mm. 21 different albums.
That's a good one.
Now, that's some of them are because it's going to be on every live version.
Yep.
Every live album they've had, they've got a different version. I don't know how many. I mean, what are some of their? They've got smashes, thrashes, and hits. It's going to be on that.
It's
It's going to be on double platinum. I mean, they released almost as many greatest hits compilations as they did studio albums.
We put out an album. This is great. You know.
Yeah.
To me, it's one of those quintessential Kiss songs. This song was actually built around the bass line. Gene Simmons wrote the bass line, and then even though the guitars drive the sound of the song, the guitar riffs were built around Gene Simmons' bass line. I really love how they use the guitars almost as a percussive instrument in here. You know, pom, pom, pom. They use the guitars to emphasize the drums right there. I was talking to y'all a little bit about this before. I know that Kiss catches a lot of flack by a lot of people that say they're overrated, this, that, and the other. I think they don't understand what Kiss is. Kiss is a performance-based product. You know, they're about fun. They're about, and like I was saying, there are very few bands that can say that you can just, if you just put on nothing but Kiss songs at a party, there's not many bands that you can just put their songs on all night long at a party and people not. There's some bands that they've got too many stinkers, you know, that are just not fun. They're slow. Kiss has some ballads, but they're few and far between. That's not their deal.
And they're good.
You know, they know where their money is made. So I really push back a little bit when people say Kiss is overrated. Kiss knows exactly what they're good at, and they just did those songs over and over and over again. But this first album, the debut album, is insane. Mm-hmm. You know, we were looking at it. It's just when you go back and you look, the ones that weren't singled out are now classic rock songs. I mean, they're just mm-hmm. so this came from that 1974 debut album. And you can in that debut album, you can hear hard rock and you can hear metal. And so despite all the talk about whether how good they are musically or lyrically or whatever, I mean, I think you could look at this album as being extremely influential as you go down the hard rock pathway of rock and roll and the metal pathway mm-hmm. of rock and roll. I think this album, Deuce, of course, which Deuce was a part of, and see the influence that Kiss had on both hard rock and metal. So my first pick, Deuce.
You get another one.
I do get another one, and I'm going to pick it from the same album, the same debut album. Let's just play the song. Mm. Oh, mark one for Paul Stanley. Little syncopation there. All right, I wanted to get a little bit of that guitar solo in there. It's widely considered, Strutter is widely considered one of Kiss's best songs. Cashbox said that this may be their most dynamic rock and roll song, with just full, you can completely hear both the bass lines and the guitar lines. This is really, you know, Paul Stanley is allowed to use all of his theatrical, emotional stuff that he likes to do, and really kind of... obviously, the lyrics are sexual in nature, but in not necessarily overtly so. So, to me, this is just one, and it's also one that is going to be played. If you go to a Kiss concert, they are going to play Strutter. Mm-hmm. And when they've had as many hits, there's, you know, and we've all been to concerts where they've got so many hits, you come away disappointed because you're like, oh, they didn't play this, you didn't play this. You can bet your bottom dollar that they're going to play Strutter at a concert. And this is one that, I mean, this is as far as, like, I feel like this is a song that could be released today and still have some appeal. So it's got, like, that timeless quality, even though it was released all the way back. I mean, well, gosh, 50 years ago.
Ew.
Ooh. Whoa! 1974 was 50 years ago.
Hey, I'm 50.
Whoa! Heather, you're 50 years old. You were born in 74.
I was.
You were. You share a birth year with Kiss. How about that? But this has always been one that it has been one of, in addition to that, and this is where, you know, maybe my personal taste is, this has always been one of my favorite Kiss songs anyway. So that may have influenced it a little bit. But I think if you ask around, people will say Strutter ought to be on the list. So there we go. That's my choice. Heather?
My turn. Huh. Well, my next pick is also off the 1974 debut album. And it is also about a prostitute. It is Black Diamond. Written by Paul Stanley. Pictures only begun.
Got you under their thumb. Hit it!
So he wrote it, but Gene came in with this riff and added it. Which is a great riff. Then they bring Peter Criss in on lead vocal, so mark one down.
Mark one for Peter Criss.
And I love his voice. Appears on 9 of their albums, you know, live, the box sets. I love this song because it shows off every single person in the band. It showcases them. I love that riff. I've come to realize that I really am a Gene fan, I guess, and his contributions, either vocally or his bass lines, or I love that heaviness that he brings to the band. I love those vocals, though, those mm-hmm. harmonies and on the oohs, and I like how it kicks in. I always love a good, you know, slow start and then kind of kick in the teeth. And so while this isn't even maybe one of my favorite Kiss songs, I think it is one of their best. So, and among Kiss fans, you see this pop up a lot on people's favorites, but I think musically is one of, if not their best, musically. So
we're 5 picks in, and 3 of them have come off that debut album.
I know, yeah.
And so, I mean,
solid.
We talk a lot about great debut albums, and this one rarely gets people's attention. But, you know, as I was looking at this album, I'm like, holy crap balls.
I mean, I think you could put this album up against albums like Appetite and...
Sean side-eyed you big
time. I mean, as far as being... I think Appetite is a better album, but I'm saying as far as if you're putting albums...
If you're looking at
debut albums that change the trajectory of somebody's career,
sheer volume of songs that are still relevant to their repertoire and what people think. I mean,
honestly, I'm not trying to say it's as good.
Like, honestly, if you look at it from that perspective, this was more successful in that regard than Appetite, of just having the sheer volume of songs that are still a major component of what we think of as Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is very similar to me, like the Van Halen debut album, which is just loaded with a bunch of songs that we still, you know, recognize as big Van Halen hits. But that's the fascinating thing about some of these albums. I mean, you're looking at them and you're like, some of these songs that are just like ingrained as major songs for Kiss or Van Halen, they weren't even singles.
Right.
And so it's like, how do they get to be such a part of, with Kiss, it's probably they did the live albums, mm-hmm. and so they were reinforced, I think, in some cases through the live albums. But
Yeah, like, and they change them. That like on this, they slow the tape down. It sounds like they're tuning down and tuning down and tuning down. They're actually slowing the tape down. But like I think in the live versions they speed it up, you know. And did you just get worked into this frenzy, you know? Because again, so much of their magic is in the performance aspect of it, and so that's why their live albums are so obviously so successful, mm-hmm. because they're better. There are a few bands, I think, that are better live than they are. So especially now in this day and age when you can punch in and fix every little thing and it's just perfection on the end result, you know, it's very hard when you sound so good on a recording to go out and people expect it to sound like that. And
yeah.
But with Kiss, it's about attitude and theatrics, you know, and that really, sometimes those things don't come through on an album.
Right.
But they come through when you watch them,
mm-hmm.
you know, either through a YouTube video. You can see it somewhat through a YouTube video, but, you know, like with Kiss, I remember what year would we say that was?
99, 90? 98, 99, something like that.
I mean, I just being absolutely floored. I had never seen a live performance like that, you know, just with, I mean, it was a show. It was much a show as it was a concert,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, all right, Beth, last pick of round two.
All right. It's hard to choose, but this might be my favorite Kiss song, Heaven's on Fire.
Oh, that's such a good song.
So this is from a 1984 album, Animalize, and it's one of the only, just a few from their non-makeup era that they still perform live. So this, like we talked about how they cover a broad range within rock, this song is one marking their transition into that 80s glam metal scene. This is the second album from that time. The first was Lick It Up. When they were adjusting to that MTV-driven music scene. And they're also in transition with personnel, with Ace and Peter leaving the band. So this song helped kind of reestablish Kiss and make them relevant in a new decade. It embraced that sexier glam rock sound and became known by younger audiences who may not have been familiar with some of their earlier work. But it still maintains those core Kiss elements, the power chords, that really anthem-like chorus with high energy performing, that arena rock sound. And so musically, it opens with that vocal riff from Paul Stanley where he's just kind of like going nuts. And that was actually a vocal warm-up from him that was just accidentally recorded. And they were like, that's cool, let's put that in there. So that's what that song starts off with. But it's bright, energetic. It's got that open sound to the guitar solo, which is kind of a more pop-leaning sound. And the chorus is just huge and anthemic. It's easy to sing along to. So lyrically, it's got those typical 80s rock themes, desire, lust, passion, that primal energy. And it's pretty straightforward, like we talked about. It's just fun. It's, yeah. You know, that excitement of living in the moment. It's very Kiss, party, passion, rock and roll.
This video is...
Yeah.
This video, it's very Billy Squire dance. I mean, it gets a little...
This was rough for Gene. This was not his best era.
Well, wait, here's the thing. I disagree. Gene Simmons is, like, you had a crush on Paul Stanley.
Yeah.
I would have been a Gene Simmons girl.
No, I don't mean it was like, a lot of people said, oh, he doesn't look good without makeup, blah, blah. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Gene in hot pink is clearly not.
Yeah, that's him. not his
He doesn't theme. Have his demon persona to to hide behind.
And his little, when he was snapping and dropping on the snaps when he's in the videos, it's like, Gene, oh, man. And I don't think he felt super comfortable, honestly.
Well, probably not, because it's a lot easier when you have makeup or some sort of costume to perform in a certain way or to just let go. Like, you have no inhibitions because it's like I have some this wall and some protection. But when it's just you and you're just God-given self out there, it's a lot more intimidating, which I don't know that he can really be intimidated. I guess he probably could. But, like, you know, the self-consciousness doesn't come in quite as much when you are in character.
I mean, I was right in it, you know, so I enjoyed their non-makeup years, but it's weird, you know, it was very, like, it was a big deal. I mean, when MTV premiered them without their makeup and revealed their real faces and everything, it was.
And it feels like when I was listening, The harmonies in this seem, and I may just be overthinking it, they seem much more polished in this era than they do before.
Yeah.
Because in the glam rock, as opposed to the hard rock, it's probably more important to be, you know, it's just more fitting for the subgenre that they were in. But, like, it just seems like like, it's a lot more polished and clean, and I mean, it obviously comes with the subgenre, but one of the things that you can do when you're promoting this tough, we don't care about the rules attitude, which was the way Kiss was brought up, you can miss a note and be like, that's how good we are. We don't care. You can like it or not like it. But you almost have to be, like, super careful about making sure that your harmonies are tight during the glam rock era, because number one, it just seems like everything's flashier in glam rock as opposed to hard rock. And so the thing about flash is, if you're not perfect, you're not as flashy, if that makes sense.
Yeah. They were ahead of their time. I mean, for this to come out in, I think this came out in like 83 or 84 or something like that. I mean, that's still a few years away from, like, when the real, you know, the Poisons, the Rats, the, you know, that were really hitting hard in like 87, 88. They were ahead of the curve with that sound and that look. So I love that song.
I do too.
Love it.
Oh.
Beth, you get another one.
Great. So let's just kind of keep it going. My third pick is a ballad.
Ooh.
Yes.
We haven't had one of those yet, have we?
Well, here you go. It's Reason to Live. Oh.
This transports me back to, like, junior high.
Departure from their hard rock and glam metal sounds. It's more introspective and has a more emotional energy, whereas, you know, a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today is just swagger and attitude, kind of comparing it to something like Heaven's on Fire, where that is a swag-tastic song. I love that one. So this track, to your point, Ben, was produced by Ron Nevison, who's known for his work with Heart and Ozzy Osbourne. And this production style is more clean and polished so that the focus of this song could be more on the emotion, and it's more appealing commercially so you can reach a broader audience. So the song is about someone searching for strength in the aftermath of a heartbreak, which is very not Kiss, right? Like, you can't break my heart because I'm just there'll be another one to come after you, you know, kind of. That's kind of the feeling I get from most other Kiss songs. Like, you can be replaced. It's not, this is not about the heart. But Paul Stanley's vocals are super powerful and over the top here. They have heavy use of synthesizers and full backing vocals. The harmonies on this song are great. And so it's some of my favorite harmony work that they do. And then they hit you with the freaking key change. Because it's already at the beginning of the song, like, he's soaring vocally. And that high harmony above him is even more kind of impressive. And then we're going to take it up. And we can still do that. So I don't sleep on Kiss's vocals.
Yeah,
for sure.
Then that quintessential glam metal guitar solo.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Absolutely. Kulick, like, those years, the Eric Carr and Bruce Kulick years, compared to, it's just, it's so different.
Yeah, so it's like, it is more mature and more widely accessible sound than some of the hard rock stuff. But it just, to me, it showcases their ability to adapt to a changing musical landscape and to embrace, you know, the popularity of a different format of music, because they had seen, you know, Aerosmith and other bands having huge hits. This is 1987, so huge hits with other power ballads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we can do that too. So let's write one.
And Gene just largely sits there in those videos and, like, mean mugs you, tries to be smoldering.
Yes, yes. With women hanging all over him. I love how when they have this era, his bass has his face with the demon on it, where he's like, I'm not letting go of that. So, yeah, that's my third pick. Heather, what about you?
Wow. Mine is really different. but it's again, it's a Gene-centric song, right. So give a point to Gene. He actually wrote this from 1977, Rock and Roll Over, Calling Dr. Love.
Oh, boy.
And it has cowbell. Written by Gene Simmons in a Holiday Inn in Evansville, Indiana.
You need my love, baby, oh so bad. You're not the only one I've ever had.
It's so different than reading the last.
Don't you know you'll be a misery? I love this part.
They call me
Dr. Love.
They call me Dr. Love.
Call me Dr. Love.
I've got the cure you're thinking of.
This actually reached number 16. It was their fourth top 20 single. I don't know. I mean, there's not much to say about this. I love it.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. And, I mean, it's cheeky, you know, but the groove is still kind of nasty.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so it has that grit to it, you know, but then you've got these, you know, kind of, almost humorous.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a wink, you know, to, you know, you think.
It's so over the top.
Like, you can just see nurses, like if you were making a video back in the day, you could just see a bunch of girls dressed like sexy nurses or something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Calling doctor. and it's in, you know, it's so, I guess it's juxtaposition with, you know, with his gritty, you know, gravelly vocals and, you know, and his demon face, you know, calling Dr. Love. He doesn't look like the Dr. Love of the band, but according to Shannon Tweed, he was.
He sounds like he was a Well,
no
we
way.
We don't even have to.
Fun imagine. Fact. Oh. It's time for a fun fact.
It's time for a fun fact. Fun fact.
Yeah. Love primarily treated female patients. So for the demo of Calling Dr. Love, Simmons recruited Katie Sagal.
From the
who sang in the group with no name and Bette Midler's backing band, the Harlettes, before embarking on a successful acting career as Peg Bundy, and she was also in Sons of Anarchy.
Her role in Sons of Anarchy, she was brilliant. Yeah. She was great in Sons of Anarchy.
And let's not forget her work in the Disney Channel original movie, Smart House. She's shown in that.
You know, I can't forget it because I did not know that it existed. I've not seen that.
So Peg Bundy.
What's it about?
It's about, it's called Smart House. So this family, this guy is a teenager and he enters a contest to win a smart house and they win. So his family moves in and it's basically... It's AI before AI was big, right? So the house will provide you anything you want. You go into the kitchen, you say, hey, give me a smoothie.
Like the
and
Jetsons.
A smoothie will just come up from the counter just the way you want it. And she does all these things for you. But over time, she starts becoming super overprotective and overstepping her boundaries. And then
sounds like AI.
She comes to life. Yeah. So it was a warning before we got to where we are today. Disney Channel ahead of its time.
So, Calling Dr. Love with Peg Bundy. Featuring.
Right. Featuring
Peg Bundy.
That's such a name. I mean, like, on both, you know, Peg. First and last name. Yeah. Classic Peg.
That's my
all.
Pick?
Yeah. That's all I got.
I can't tell you how badly I wanted to pull the trigger on Love Gun right here. I wanted to do it so badly.
I see what you did there.
Uh-huh. You saw what I did there?
Yeah, I saw what you
did. I mean, I really did. Like, I wanted, but I know we said at the outset that this was not just going to be about their most popular songs. But as I was thinking about it, the more I thought, it would be somewhat of a travesty if Rock and Roll All Night did not make the list. And so, with some reluctance, I can't say it, because who doesn't? I mean, you like Rock and Roll All Night, don't you?
Sure.
Don't you like it?
Not particularly. To play in the band, in our band, it's great. It is a great pick. But do I like it?
I thought, okay, I may be wrong. I thought it was one of the few universally loved songs.
It is universally loved.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
I think as far as their whole catalog, it may be the worst song they ever wrote.
It's quite simple.
It is. But which I selected it anyway. Rock and roll all night. You say you want to go for a spin. The party's just begun, we'll let you in.
Oh, give Gene a towel.
Mark one for Gene.
We'll drive you crazy. You keep on shouting. You keep on shouting.
I just made my drumming debut. All right, so. Here's my case. I'm going to make my case because I know y'all are already gearing up to make the cut on this song. My case is simply this. A song that is universally, minus Beth, loved. has to have, if not great lyrically... And it's pretty simple lyrically, if not great musically, and it's pretty simple musically, it has to have, and this is my thinking on this, it has to have an unquantifiable quality.
It does have
that makes it je ne sais quoi. Yeah. It has the it factor that can't be measured. You know what I mean? You know what I mean a couple of times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's a great song. But even if it's not.
You know what I mean?
This is not the time to make your case for getting it in there.
No. But here's what I'm going to say. I think the simplicity is the genius behind the song. Because it is, the purpose of this song is to be a live banger, which it is.
It is that.
It is that.
Here's what's great about this song. It's so simple, even a caveman can do it. Which means that bands all over the country can play this song. And a lot of bands play this song.
They do.
And you know who's upset about it?
Nobody.
When the band plays this song?
Nobody. People like
nobody.
It.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And so the genius of it is that it's easy to sing along to. It's easy for bands to learn and play. And people love it. Absolutely love it. It's the centerpiece of their live show. Mm. And it's the centerpiece of a lot of bands' live show. It's played in
a lot
arenas
of
all over the place.
This is crazy.
So we'll get to the arguing point in a little bit.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. But here's an interesting fact. So it was the studio version was on the 1975 album Dress to Kill. Two versions of this song charted in 1975 because, as Kiss is prone to do, they released a live album in 1975, which was a different version than this one. They both charted. And in fact, the live version rose all the way to number 12. It charted better than the studio version. So this one got all the way up to number 12 on the Billboard Top 100. So, which was really hard, by the way, for in 1975 for hard rock to chart that high, you know. But anyway, that's my choice. Well, let me ask you this, just off the record, but totally recorded for everyone to hear. Do you like this song or Love Gun better?
Love Gun's not my favorite, so it's hard to. I don't know.
I love it. Pull the trigger of my Love Gun.
I thought you were gonna say Lick It Up, and I was like, well, I can't listen to this. Can't listen to you talk about this.
Oh my gosh, that they had some awful songs. Baby, let's put.
Looks like a muscle, and you make me want to flex. What rhymes with that? Oh man.
Yeah, they had some songs that were definitely not children appropriate, for sure. But Rock and Roll All Night is.
Yeah.
It is. Somebody.
Beth, you did answer. Love Gun or Rock and Roll All Night?
Neither.
It's brutal. Y'all don't like the same Kiss songs I like, I guess.
Yeah. Speaking of misheard lyrics, somebody thought they were saying, I want to rock and roll all night and part of every day.
And part of every day.
Listen, yeah. I can't be doing this.
Well, if you start before
turn 34,
the night,
I can't be doing 2 days straight of partying. I got to do all night, and I can do part of the next
part of every day. Yeah.
But I need to sleep.
But there's two different things. You party during the day, and you rock and roll at night. I want to rock and roll all night, but not party. But I want to party every day, but not rock and roll.
Quite the analysis.
Uh-huh.
I don't know when that leaves time to sleep.
It doesn't.
Oh, I'm thinking too hard.
Yeah. I think you're overcomplicating that song a bit.
So that's nine picks. Before we get to the nine picks, do we have a count on Gene versus, because we've completed it, right? We've got all nine picks.
Yep.
Gene versus Paul Stanley.
This is very interesting how this played out. Because, you know, we have nine picks, right? So
you would think it'd be 5-4.
You'd think it would. However, we had the one Peter Criss song.
Peter Criss song.
So we're four for Paul, four for Gene, and one for Peter Criss. How about that?
And nary a Beth in sight.
How dare you put some respect on my freaking name? Nobody drafted?
You didn't draft it.
No, I didn't. Yeah. Well, because
that would have been a little on the nose.
It was on my list.
It's actually not a song that you really want sung to you, though, right?
No, I mean, because it's true.
It's, like, you know, it's like, oh, I care about something else more than you.
And here's did you know that Hard Luck Woman was written for Rod Stewart, and he rejected the song?
I can see that, yeah.
And then he tried to sing it like Rod Stewart. You know that?
Yeah.
You'd be a hard luck woman.
It's like, I like that song.
You tried to Rod Stewart that thing up a little bit there, didn't you? So we need to talk about the songs that were not selected. Okay. For me, I had Love Gun, obviously. I did have Beth on my list, yeah, and also Shout It Out Loud.
Mm-hmm. You got to have a party.
And if Gene tells you that.
That's right.
Beth, what'd you have that wasn't on the list?
I had I Was Made for Loving You.
Ooh, I like that song too.
I did have Beth. Sure Know Something, because I love that bass line at the beginning. I think I wouldn't call myself a bass player. Sometimes I play bass in our band if it's necessary, and it's very simple. So I love that Kiss really showcases bass in this band, which not a lot of bands will do. I did put Rock and Roll Online on there. And then I have We Are One, and the song that I would have drafted first, but I didn't because it's a cover, is God Gave Rock and Roll to You.
Same. I love that song.
I love that song, and I think it showcases musically, vocally, probably some of their best. I'm not going to say, like, it's probably like a Dollar General version of Bohemian Rhapsody, if you know what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's a very... It's
very put your big glider in the air. And
but it has a lot of different sections to it, kind of like, yeah, that. And
I love that.
I love it, but it was a cover, so I wanted to put it on the list, but I didn't draft it high.
Heather, do you have any other songs to add to the list?
I actually put God Gave Rock and Roll to You at number 9 because I just wanted it on the list.
That's where I put it, too.
I had Forever. That's my favorite Kiss ballad. I think it's so sweet. That's a wedding song, if you ask me, but... And on Kiss Unplugged, so good. Everything else got drafted except Tears Are Falling.
Oh,
I love Tears Are Falling.
Do you remember when I was singing the harmony note to this? And Mom was like, Ben, that can't be right. That can't be right. And Heather was like, no, that's right. But it's like, oh, no. And then I like to sing the... Tears are falling. I like to go with that one. Tears are falling.
They are very choral sometimes.
They are. They are. I love that song. So it, like.
But Mom was like, that can't be right. That can't be right.
That's right. Like, smashes, thrashes, and hits, man. That's such a fun.
I like the cover of that one.
Yeah.
That red, that maroon background. They got, like, bones on the bottom. Is it bones on the bottom?
I don't remember.
And then, like, Paul Stanley's, like, holding up all five fingers. You know, spreading those fingers out for
jazz
a while.
Hands.
Yeah. That was back still in there.
That was no makeup. Yeah. So we have 9 songs.
We do. Ben has drafted Deuce, Strutter, and Rock and Roll All Night. Heather drafted God of Thunder, Black Diamond, and Calling Dr. Love. And I drafted Detroit Rock City, Heaven's on Fire, and Reason to Live.
So we have 9 songs. It's time to go from 9 to 5.
Working 9 to 5.
Okay, so I'm going to make the argument, and I'm going to be very honest and transparent here, that I would like to go ahead and move Detroit Rock City over because, in full disclosure, it was number 1 on my list, too. So it's number 1 on 2 lists.
Yeah.
Heather, where did you have Detroit Rock City on your 6 list? So, I mean, would it be fair to say that that's probably going over?
Yeah.
Easy.
Now, I also had God of Thunder as number 5. You had it number 1. Did you have God of Thunder in there?
I didn't have it.
Ooh, Purgatory.
All right.
For God of Thunder. What about I picked Deuce first. Did y'all have Deuce on your list?
No.
Yes. Hold on.
I didn't have any crossover
Seven.
With anybody.
What?
I had no crossover.
What do you mean you didn't have any
crossover? With none of the songs that the rest of you drafted, I had not them on my list. So everything you're going to be like, did you have this? It's going to be a no. That's never happened before for me, but.
Wow. You are the fly in the ointment, my friend. Okay. So that's interesting. The song that I didn't have on my list because this is going to frustrate Heather. I don't think it's that good. It's Black Diamond.
Weird.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you
have Strutter on the list.
Correct. Oh, actually, I did have Rock and Roll All Night.
What?
Oh, no, but no. I don't like that one.
You didn't have it on your list at all?
No.
Well.
Did you have Calling Dr. Love?
Me?
Yeah.
I did. I had Calling Dr. Love number 4. My top 5 was Detroit Rock City, Deuce, Strutter, Calling Dr. Love, and God of Thunder. Mm. Now, Beth selected Detroit Rock City, which was my number 1. Her second pick was Heaven's on Fire, which was my number 8. And I did not have Reason to Live on my list.
Heaven's on Fire was my number 3.
Oh, that's high.
So where was Heaven's on Fire on your list?
2.
I think that's probably going. You had it 3?
3. Mm-hmm.
So it's probably going over. I would say we're probably good to put Heaven's on Fire over.
And probably, what did you had something else on maybe that Heather had drafted that was also high?
Calling Dr. Love.
Was it that one or God of Thunder?
No, I had God of Thunder 5.
Oh, yeah, and I had 1.
Did you have Deuce on your list?
I did.
Where?
7.
I may not get any in there. Where'd you have Strutter?
I didn't have Strutter.
Oh, yeah. I may not get any in there.
I used my prostitute song on.
I may get goose egged on on the Kiss list. I'll make my own dang list.
Did we? So where was your? Where was your God of Thunder?
You said mine. Mine was in the top 5. Mine was number 5.
And it was your number 1.
Yeah.
We need a Gene song.
I think that's
two,
probably
we got
the
2 Paul Stanley songs in there right now, don't we?
Yep. Man. Listen. I don't want to do it.
What do you not
But I did
do?
Have it on my list. But you didn't have it on your list at all, Rock and Roll All Mm-mm. Night.
So, well, okay. You're the only one that had Black Diamond on your list.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no crossover with Black Diamond. So that may be one that we can mm-hmm. eliminate from contention.
Okay. And no crossover with Reason to Live, I assume.
I did not have it on mine.
Okay. Was there crossover with Deuce.
Mm-hmm.
There was none with Strutter.
There was none with Strutter, though, right? You didn't have it on your list.
There was crossover with Rock and Roll, and there was crossover with Calling Dr. Love. We have 2 spots left.
I had Calling Dr. Love number 4.
Well, okay.
How many? We got 2 spots left?
We have 2 spots left and only 2 songs that had crossover. That would be Deuce and Calling Dr. Love. Oh, sorry. In Rock and Roll.
In Rock and Roll.
I forgot about that one. So it matters to me not, honestly. I'm kind of meh on all these songs.
I had Deuce number 2 and Calling Dr. Love 4, so I would like to have Deuce...
Mm-hmm.
In, but you're saying that those 2 had crossover anyway, Deuce and Calling Dr. Love.
So really, I would say we have 2 spots and 3 songs that are logically in contention for those because they're the only 3 that had crossover on mm-hmm. list. So it'd be Deuce, Rock and Roll All Night, and Calling Dr. Love.
I see.
So we really just have to cut one.
We got to cut one. Heather. Well, and of the 3, even I would cut Rock and Roll All Night because it was number six on my list. And both Deuce and Calling Dr. Love are in my top five.
Okay.
Okay.
That seems easy.
We may get hate mail over that because, as we have said, Rock and Roll All Night is universally loved, except for Beth.
Well, and the others in our band, like, every time we kind of just groan a little bit, but I'm like, it's worth it to play this song because the people like it. Mm-hmm. I think I like it the most out of the other people in our band, but the crowd likes it a lot.
It's kind of like Freebird, probably for bands.
Yeah. I would imagine. All right, we got a top five. Detroit Rock City, Heaven's on Fire, God of Thunder, Deuce, and Calling Dr. Love.
Now we get to rank them.
Yeah, we do.
For me, I would put Detroit Rock City one. It was my number one.
It was number one on two lists.
But where was it on yours?
Six.
Ooh.
It's okay, though.
It is number one.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's the only one that had all three people on the list, isn't it?
Oh.
Is that true?
I think so.
Did we all... Who didn't have Heaven's on Fire? You didn't.
I did have Heaven's on Fire. I had it number eight.
So we all three had that one.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be number two. I don't know.
Obviously, I'm good with that.
It's way down the list for me. I had...
Heaven's on Fire was my original number three.
I'm not too broke up about the top five at all because four of the songs that were in there were in my top five. Strutter's the only one that didn't make the list. Okay.
So
where did you have Heaven's on Fire on your list?
Two.
Where did you have it on your list?
Three.
I feel like that's probably going to be number two.
Okay. This might be easier than we thought. Okay. So now we have God of Thunder, Deuce, and Calling Dr. Love.
This is where it's going to get a little dicey because I personally feel, well, you're going to be the swing vote pretty much. Here on out.
Yeah.
Because,
okay.
like I would select Deuce as I would go Deuce, Calling Dr. Love, God of Thunder, and she's going to go God of Thunder, Calling Dr. Love, Deuce.
Correct.
So we're in the exact opposite order.
Yeah.
Which means we could compromise and go ahead and move Calling Dr. Love, which would be in the middle. We could go ahead and make it last, and then we're just debating. Because that way, your number one at least gets three, or of the three that we've got remaining.
Yeah.
Or four, and then the one that I like would get three or four.
Yeah, I like them both, so...
So we're okay with putting Calling Dr. Love five?
Yeah. Okay.
So now three and four is between Deuce and God of Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And now all eyes go to Beth.
Oh, okay. Well, I would put God of Thunder at three.
Heartbreaking.
Look at this.
We did it.
What?
All right. Gene.
Kiss is the band that brings people together. Yep.
So we put Paul Stanley on our tops, and then Gene Simmons kind of rounded it out.
What? So, wow. So you're telling me...
But we have more Gene songs to Paul Stanley.
But what I'm hearing is that, Paul Stanley had the first two.
The top two, and then the rest are Gene.
The
so
rest
really
was
have,
Gene. So
have
Gene had Gene. More songs in the top five, mm-hmm. but Paul Stanley took the top two spots.
Yeah. Yep.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Life is about balance.
So what's the top five?
Our final ranking of the best Kiss songs. Number one, Detroit Rock City. Two, Heaven's on Fire. Three, God of Thunder. Four, Deuce. And five, Calling Dr. Love.
Fantastic. And hey, before we let you go, which actually you can go anytime you want to because you control your your own device. But before the show ends, we want to remind you that we are on Facebook. Look for the Music List podcast and the Music List. There's a group. So we've actually got two pages on Facebook. Find us on both of those. We have Twitter, which is at the Music List podcast, I think.
I don't know. You run it.
I do run it, but it's cool. So, like, to be completely fair, I'm not on it all the time.
Yeah, right.
But I do get notifications. So if you send us something, I'll see it. We have Instagram, mm-hmm. which is
The Real Musicless Podcast.
The real, not, do not be confused by the fake Musicless Podcast out there. You want to find the real one, which is us.
Yeah.
Now, are there any more social media platforms that we're on?
Allegedly, we have a TikTok.
We do. That's another one that I don't really check very often.
And none of us would know how to use anyway, so.
We're going for organic growth.
Yeah.
And
we're going to have one of our children guys, work it out. Cause
we are big in the Philippines.
Really?
I'm serious, yeah. Like, if you go into, like, the top 100 music podcast that people listen to in the Philippines.
What?
Yeah, 100%. So, hey, citizens of the Philippines, thank you.
Shout out to the Philippines.
Wow.
Thank you for your support.
Yes.
We love you guys. So,
right.
Beth's mouthing something at me.
When's the last day to vote for that thing?
Oh, it's like November.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. They can vote for us. Hey, listen, Linda. Listen, Linda. You need to go to rcast.com, and not with a C, but with a K, Arkansas. ARKAST.com, and go to the voting for the RCAST. We're in multiple categories. We're in comedy. We're in culture. We're in entertainment, and we're in music. Mm-hmm. So there are four opportunities to vote for us. These are podcasts based out of Arkansas. We would really, really appreciate you going to the RCAST page.
It's ArkansasPodcasters.org.
Arkansas Podcast. Okay, I gave you
the wrong. That wasn't even close.
It's the RCAST Awards.
Yeah,
yes, the RCAST Awards. Yeah.
ArkansasPodcasters.org.
And we have a link on our social media.
Yeah, we do. So the easiest way is you go to our social media on Facebook. We can link you directly to
all your emails. All your emails.
Your college email, your junk email that you send all the spam ones to.
Your work email.
Now, I will say, if we win anything, we will be unbearable.
Oh, absolutely.
We will be unbearable.
Like, everything will be like the award-winning.
Like, I want to win the comedy one so bad. So when these kids at school say, Mr. Dell, you're not even funny. Oh, nay. No. I have evidence.
Yeah.
Right here.
Just show them your award.
Yeah.
It's a major award.
Yeah. So we want to thank you guys for listening. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with a full-blown Halloween episode.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
And so you are not going to want to miss that. Join us again. Thanks for listening, and rock on, even all night.
And part of every day. For joining us on the Musicless Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode.
She almost had it.